Today is November 18, 2020, and this is episode number 32 of Blurred Laws and Life with me, your host, Richard Bush. Last week, we did not have an episode of Blurred Laws and Life because once again, I found myself having to actually do real work. I was in a trial, and that trial resumed again this week, and it just concluded today, and so I am back at Blurred Laws and Life once again. You know, Blurred Laws and Life has been a lot of fun for me, but I have to say it was a lot easier when we were in lockdown and could not leave my condo and the world was shut down. It provided a nice diversion and something enjoyable to do. But now that the world has opened up and I have to do real work again, it is more of a challenge to do these every week. But what I've learned when I have missed an episode of Blurred Laws in Life is that I actually now have people in the world, not everybody, not everyone, but I know that I do have some people addicted to Blurred Laws in Life. I receive text messages. What happened? Why is there no episode of Blurred Laws in Life this week? I am addicted to Blurred Laws in Life. I need Blurred Laws in Life. I crave Blurred Laws in Life. What are you doing to me when I don't have Blurred Laws in Life? I feel empty, isolated, alone, deprived. One such person who now is addicted to Blurred Laws in Life is on my fantasy football league, in my fantasy football league, Robert Valdez. Robert is a nemesis of mine in fantasy football. He always wins. He always has a good team. And this year I am battling Robert for first place in fantasy football. But now that I know that he is addicted to Blurred Laws in Life, and I know that he craves Blurred Laws in Life, I kind of feel like a drug dealer. And Blurred Laws in Life is my supply. And Robert, I'm not going to use the phrase because this is a PG-rated show, but let's just say he needs Blurred Laws in Life and apparently will do anything to get it. So now that I know this, I can withhold Blurred Laws in Life from him whenever I choose. Maybe in exchange for a trade for one of his best players, maybe so that he throws a game, maybe so that he sets a bad lineup. It's an incredible position of power Blurred Laws in Life has now given me. But to the rest of you, rest assured, I will not withhold your supply of Blurred Laws in Life unless an absolute emergency arises. I will always be there with the supply of Blurred Laws and Life. So now, on to episode number 32 of Blurred Laws and Life. In the news this week was a lawsuit that had been filed against Donald Trump and his campaign for the unauthorized use of certain music as part of his campaign. Donald Trump moved to dismiss that lawsuit this week on the grounds of a legal doctrine known as fair use. It is a very complicated doctrine. It's not applied evenly. It's raised oftentimes by defendants. We've touched on it in Blurred Laws in Life on prior episodes, but I thought that with this being raised in the news, now would be a good time to discuss this fair use defense in greater detail. And not so coincidentally, I actually had a case in which a defendant raised the defense of fair use, and we prevailed on a motion that they filed to dismiss the case on their fair use defense. And the court went through the analysis in detail, with great explanation. And so I thought we could walk through that together today as part of the fair use defense to explain how the elements work and how the court considers the different elements of fair use in reaching a decision on whether it is applicable and is a valid defense in a copyright infringement case, a specific copyright infringement case, to the alleged infringement. In the Donald Trump copyright infringement case, Eddie Grant brought a claim for copyright infringement against Donald Trump for use of his song Electric Avenue. The defendant, Trump, moved to dismiss the copyright infringement claim, alleging that it constituted fair use. And his argument was, in the opening of his brief, that President Trump posted on his personal Twitter account an animated video and 40 seconds of the plaintiff's song, which was about 17% of the plaintiff's song, is intertwined with excerpts from a speech made by Joe Biden so that Biden's voice is heard over the plaintiff's music. The defendant, Trump, alleges that the audio volume of Biden's voice overpowers the volume of the music, making it difficult to hear the lyrics of the plaintiff's song. Mr. Trump alleges that the video is, in his words, a, quote, transformative, non-commercial work that was used on social media in support of President Trump's 2020 presidential campaign. They go on to allege that the video employs a minimal amount of the song needed to convey its, quote, unquote, transformative purpose. They allege that the video has no effect on the potential market value of the original work, and that for those reasons and others, the use of the plaintiff's music in the animated video was, as a matter of law, fair use. They asked the court to dismiss the case. Now, rather than go through the elements of fair use in the context of the Donald Trump case with the plaintiff's allegations set forth, I thought it would be easier and perhaps better to actually go through a case I was involved with where I represented the plaintiff and where the defendant, the A&E Television Network, moved to dismiss on fair use because there are a lot of similarities between the two cases and the court's analysis in denying the motion to dismiss is applicable to this situation. So I think it would be helpful to hear how the court in my case analyzed these very elements including whether a work is quote-unquote transformative in the new use, whether it was for a commercial purpose, and for the other elements that a court considers in connection with a fair use analysis. I have been lucky enough to represent many incredible and legendary songwriters and performers in my career. Among those that I have been lucky enough to represent are the sons of Felice and Budlow Bryant, two of the most important songwriters of their generation. Among their many songs that they wrote is the song that is basically the state song of Tennessee, Rocky Top, which was written, as I said, by the great and legendary Felice and Budlow Bryant, and currently owned by my clients, Dane and Del Bryant of House of Bryant.
Wish that I was on old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top, ain't no telephone bills.
In the case that the House of Bryant, Del, and Dane brought against A&E, A&E had used parts of that song to discuss Tennessee culture as part of a program that was exploring a murder that took place at a hotel in Knoxville, Tennessee. And the Bryants did not want their parents' song to be part of anything negative related to Knoxville or some type of criticism of the culture in that part of Tennessee, and objected to the use of the song. But A&E put the song in the documentary, or in the program, I should say, and claimed fair use when House of Bryant, Del and Dane Bryant, ultimately brought a lawsuit against them for copyright infringement. In the first few minutes of the episode, the program in which Rocky Top has played, among other things, the narrator and various interviewees discuss Knoxville's culture, including the cultural impact of the University of Tennessee. About 3 minutes and 35 seconds into the episode, after an interviewee notes that UT is a, quote, major source of creative activity, the narrator, with the video of the episode shifting from campus scenes to game day scenes from the UT football stadium, remarks, "And as the stark raving orange-clad masses will attest, they play a little football too. And for the next 6 to 7 seconds, the UT band can clearly be heard playing Rocky Top as scenes from the game and the crowd are displayed. In the 5 to 6 seconds after that, an interviewee discusses that UT football's quote-unquote nuts, while images of a football game continue to be displayed, and Rocky Top can still be heard in the background, although less clearly than in the 6 to 7 preceding seconds. Rocky Top is not played at any other time in the episode, which runs about 47 minutes, and for the most part focuses on, as I said, an attempted contract killing that has nothing to do with the University of Tennessee, Rocky Top, or football." So after reciting the relevant facts, the court on the motion to dismiss that A&E filed, seeking the court to rule as a matter of law that their use of Rocky Top was fair use, the court began by noting that the purpose of the fair use doctrine is to ensure that courts avoid rigid application of the copyright infringement statute when on occasion it would stifle the very creativity which the law is designed to foster. In applying the elements of fair use, the court said that the following are the required elements. One, the purpose and character of the use, including whether such use is a commercial use or is for nonprofit educational purposes. Two, the nature of the copyrighted work. Three, the amount and substantiality of the portion used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole. And four, the effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work. The ultimate test, the court said, of fair use is whether the copyright law's goal of promoting the progress of science and useful arts would be better served by allowing the use than by preventing it. With respect to the first element, the purpose and character of the use, the court said that in evaluating the purpose and character, the court considers two main points: whether the new work is transformative, and two, whether the new work is for commercial or non-commercial purposes. The court noted that while there is no dispute that the episode was made for commercial purposes, given that much of the creative work performed in this country is done for commercial purposes, the second point tends to take on less significance, especially when the new work is highly transformative. In considering whether a work is transformative, the court should explore whether the new work merely supersedes the objects of the original creation, or instead adds something new, with a further purpose or different character, altering the first with new expression, meaning, or message. The defendant, A&E, claims that its use of Rocky Top constitutes criticism, comment, or new reporting under the fair use doctrine, and claims, therefore, that the use is transformative beyond which Rocky Top is generally used. Specifically, A&E contended that, quote, "the brief use of the song Rocky Top merely illustrates an aspect of the culture of Knoxville, Tennessee, and the experience of attending a UT football game in Knoxville. That the song appears in the episode is just one of many elements of a larger factual report about the city, and their recording background noise at the football game was necessary for the documentary filmmakers to actually portray the atmosphere in and around Knoxville at the time of the factual events portrayed in the episode. The defendant also argued that it was transformative because no words from Rocky Top are heard in the episode. The use of the song Rocky Top in the episode serves as a commentary upon the very notions presented by the song itself. That is, according to the defendant, A&E, while Rocky Top portrayed East Tennessee as a quaint backwards region, the episode's discussion of Knoxville's development and the city's intense support for UT football negate the image the song portrays of East Tennesseans. Moreover, A&E argued that the cheerful sound of Rocky Top provides a stark contrast to the criminal events that are the subject of the episode. So therefore, the defendant argued in totality that its purpose in using Rocky Top was transformative in the sense that it used Rocky Top to comment on the lyrics and to incorporate Rocky Top into a larger creative whole about the city of Knoxville. So that's what they argued. If it's transformative, highly transformative, even if for a commercial purpose, A&E argued that they had a fair use defense that required the dismissal of the case. We argued in response that there is no clear connection between Rocky Top and the rest of the episode. That is, a snippet of Rocky Top simply plays in one scene of the episode with no discussion, commentary, or criticism of Rocky Top. We also said that the defendant has, in fact, not added anything to Rocky Top at all. Rather, it simply played a portion of Rocky Top in the episode. We said that because only the instrumental portion of Rocky Top is played in the episode, it defies logic to argue that the episode is somehow commenting on words and ideas from Rocky Top that are actually never stated in the episode. One of the landmark fair use cases that we relied on in making our argument is a case entitled Lennon v. Premise Media Corp. In that case, individuals that were associated with the estate of John Lennon from the Beatles sued the producers of the movie Expelled, claiming the movie infringed on their copyright in John Lennon's world-famous song Imagine. Because the movie producers used about 15 seconds of that song in the movie, including certain lyrics, without first obtaining a license. Specifically, at the relevant point in the movie, the narrator is heard discussing the dangers posed by modern scientists who advocate that society abandon religion. Just before the excerpt from Imagine is played, the narrator states these views are not new, and modern scientists who evoke them are merely lifting a page out of John Lennon's songbook. At that point, Imagine, specifically the lyrics Nothing to Kill or Die For and No Religion Too, plays while four brief sequences of black and white footage run. The first sequence features a group of children in a circle. The second is a sequence of a young girl spinning and dancing. The third sequence is of a military parade, which gives way to a close-up of Joseph Stalin, the Russian dictator, waving. The Lennon court found clearly that this use of Imagine was transformative because the movie incorporates an excerpt of Imagine for purposes of criticism and commentary. The movie uses the excerpt of Imagine to criticize what the filmmakers see as John Lennon's views being naive. Importantly, in forming this opinion, the court relied on a viewing of the movie and on declarations from the producers of the movie who provided their rationale for using Imagine and therefore eased the finding of transformative use for the court. In distinguishing that case with the Rocky Top case, the court stated that the transformative nature of Rocky Top is unapparent from a viewing of the episode. In the episode, there is no allusion to Rocky Top prior to its playing, and there is no perceptible attempt to actually place Rocky Top in any sort of larger context. As the court noted, just before Rocky Top plays, there is a general discussion of UT being a haven for college football, but there is no commentary, criticism, or even discussion of Rocky Top. Rather, basically, the excerpt from Rocky Top simply plays, fades, and then stops, and the episode moves on to the next topic. The court concluded, therefore, that, and this is a great quote, that the unsupported arguments of defense counsel, as presented in the briefing here, ring hollow and, frankly, inconsistent with the actual episode. A viewing of the episode simply does not indicate that the individuals responsible for the episode wished to comment on the lyrics of Rocky Top or that they wished to use that song to make a larger point about Knoxville. Other than the post facto interpretations of defense counsel, the court has no evidence as to what motivated the makers of the episode to use Rocky Top at this point in the episode. In the episode itself, there is little to suggest a transformative use. As the use here is commercial, and at least at this stage, non-transformative, this factor weighs against a finding of fair use. The court had less of an issue disposing of the remaining elements. As far as the nature of the copyrighted work, the court said that this was a musical composition and is therefore entitled to copyright protection, and it weighed against a finding of fair use. As far as the amount and substantiality of the portion used, the court said that it's not just the amount of use that is important, but it's the importance of the part that is used. That is a common consideration in a copyright infringement case, where the court will not only consider the quantitative, but also the qualitative importance of what is used in determining whether something is fair use, or perhaps whether it is de minimis and therefore not protectable. In this case, the court said that, quote, the 12-second excerpt from Rocky Top that plays in the episode contains at least a portion of the more famous and well-known chorus of the song, a point that weakens the defendant's argument that the amount of the song that was taken was somehow insubstantial. So the court said that essentially it is too soon to rule on this element, but it certainly does not require dismissal of the plaintiff's case on the ground that not a lot of the song was used. And finally, on the element of the effect on the potential market for the copyrighted work, the court held that allowing A&E to use this work without a license would have an impact on the licensing market for the plaintiff's work in the future, and therefore it again supported the rejection of the fair use defense. So in all, the court in the House of Bryant case denied the motion to dismiss of A&E and essentially concluded that the use was not fair use and supported a claim of copyright infringement. This was a very important victory for House of Bryant and for us. Had we lost on this issue, it would have certainly perhaps opened the floodgates to filmmakers being able to use work in their movies without licensing and paying the rights holders. But this decision put a nail in the coffin of that argument. It was a very well-reasoned decision and the correct decision. I'll say that even though I was on the plaintiff's side, I believe firmly this was the correct decision. You can't just use someone's work in a movie or a TV show without paying for it, without licensing it properly, when it involves the commercial use, you're making money off of it, and then claim somehow that it's a transformative work when there actually is no commentary or criticism whatsoever about the song itself. Now, going back to the Donald Trump case and how this analysis will affect the Donald Trump case. In the Donald Trump case, it is clear that Mr. Trump's lawyers are going to rely on the John Lennon case that was quoted in the House of Bryant case. The motion to dismiss points to the lyrics from Electric Avenue. Quote, now in the street there is violence and lots of work to be done. And they argue that, quote, these lyrics stand in stark juxtaposition to the comedic nature of the animated caricature of former VP Biden squatting and pumping a handcar with a sign that says, quote, "Your hair smells terrific," end quote, and to the excerpt of the overlaid speech that references hairy legs and kids playing with his leg hair. Obviously, Mr. Grant's purpose of creating a meaningful song for the pop music market is completely different from the animation creator's purpose of using the song to denigrate former Vice President Joe Biden. They claim that a reasonable observer would perceive that the animation uses the song for a comedic, political purpose, a different and transformed purpose from that of the original song. They also say that the effect of the use upon the potential market will not be affected. No one will listen to this version of the song in this animation video on Mr. Trump's Twitter page as opposed to licensing or paying for it, they claim. I think that the motion is weak and I think it should lose. While they are trying in a desperate way, I think, to fit this within the John Lennon decision, I don't think it works. There is nothing that I can see that comments on the actual song being used or uses the actual lyrics for comment or criticism. They simply use a song and then try to humiliate and embarrass and denigrate Joe Biden in an animated video on which the song appears. It's not like in the John Lennon situation where the actual lyrics are being used to make the argument, the comment that Mr. Lennon was naive in his views. So I think this is weak. I think it is just an attempt to fit the argument within a judicial decision they're aware of. And I don't think in any way, shape, or form this should constitute fair use. This issue of transformative work, whether the new use is a transformative work from the original use, is complicated, and it is often raised by defendants like Mr. Trump here in a way to stretch the bounds of fair use, but there are specific guidelines for comment or criticism that I just don't see being part of this use of Electric Avenue. So I hope you have enjoyed this episode number 32 of Blurred Laws and Life after we were off last week while I was in the middle of a trial. And to those who need their Blurred Laws and Life fix on a weekly basis, you are welcome. I've given you this fix, but it's just because I'm trying to build up your need for further episodes of Blurred Laws and Life. And specifically to those in my fantasy football league, Robert Valdez in particular, who clearly craves and desires Blurred Laws and Life on a weekly basis. I do love doing this show. I do love doing this on a weekly basis. In all seriousness, I apologize for not being able to do it last week. And I hope you all have had a good couple of weeks. And I hope you have a good coming week, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week on Blurred Laws and Life.